ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Bhagavatam, second canto, first chapter, called The First Step in God Realization. This morning we're doing texts 34, 35, and 36. There's no purport until we reach 36. Let me just do 34 and 35. I'll read the Sanskrit and then the translation, and then we'll do 36. Responsibly. The 34 goes like this.
Ishasya keshan viduram buvahan vasastu sandhyam kurvaryamunnaha avyaktamahur dayam monascha sachandrama sarva vikara koshaha.
O best among the Kurus, the clouds which carry water are the hairs on his head. The termination of days or nights are his dress. The word is sandhya. The word is sandhya. The dawn and dusk. This is what the Lord is wearing that day. Yeah. And the supreme cause of material creation is his intelligence. His mind is the moon, the reservoir of all changes. And 35.
Vijnana shaktim mahim amamanti sarvatmanantha karanam giritram ashvashvatarishtra gajanakani sarve nikha parshavashon deshe.
The principle of matter, mahatattva, is the consciousness of the omnipresent Lord. Vijnana Shakti is consciousness here. Vijnana Shakti. As asserted by the experts, and Rudradev is his ego, Antakarana. The horse, mule, camel, and elephant are his nails. And wild animals, and all quadrupeds, that is four-legged animals, are situated in the belt zone of the Lord. So now we come to text 36, and you can say after me.
Vayamsi
tatya karanam
vichitram
manur
manisha manujo vasah gandharva yadara charanapsarah swara smutir asuranika yeyah
vayam
sitatvya karanam vichitram manisha manujo nivasah gandharva vidyarada charanapsarah swara smitya rasuradika virya vayam sitatvya karanam vichitram manur manisha manujo nivasah gandharva vidyadara charanapsara swara smitya suranika viryah vayam sitatvya karanam vichitram Manisha Manujo Nivasa
Harva
Vidyadara Charanapsara Swara Smittir Asurani Kaviryaha
Vichitram, artistic, Manuhu, the father of mankind, Manisha, thoughts, Manujaha,
mankind,
the sons of Manu,
Nivasaha,
residence,
Gandharva,
the human beings named Gandharvas,
Vidyadharas,
Vidyadharas,
Charana,
the Charanas,
Apsaraha,
the angels, otherwise known as Heavenly Society girls, the dancing girls of the heavenly class. Swara,
musical rhythm.
Smriti,
remembrance.
Asura Anika, the demoniac soldiers.
Viryaha,
prowess. Translation. Varieties of birds are indications of his masterful artistic sense. Manu, the father of mankind, is the emblem of his standard intelligence, and humanity is his residence. The celestial species of human beings, like the Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Charanas, and angels, all represent his musical rhythm, and the demoniac soldiers are representations of his wonderful prowess. Srila Prabhupada's report. The aesthetic sense of the Lord is manifest in the artistic, colorful creation of varieties of birds like the peacock, parrot, and cuckoo. The celestial species of human beings, the heavenly species of human beings, like the Gandharvas and Vidyadharas, can sing wonderfully and can entice even the minds of the heavenly demigods. Their musical rhythm represents the musical sense of the Lord. How then can he be impersonal? His musical taste, artistic sense, and standard intelligence, which is never fallible, are different signs of the Supreme Personality. The Manu Samhita is the standard law book for humanity, and every human being is advised to follow this great book of social knowledge. Human society is the residential quarters for the Lord. This means that the human being is meant for God realization and association with God. This life is a chance for the conditioned soul to regain his eternal God consciousness and thus fulfill the mission of life. Maharaj Prahlad is the right type of representative of the Lord in the family of Asuras. None of the living beings is away from the Lord's gigantic body. That is to say, not even the Asuras. Each and every one has a particular duty in relation to the Supreme Body. Disruption in the matter of discharging the specific duty assigned to each and every living being is the cause of disharmony between one living being and another. But when the relationship is re-established in relation with the Supreme Lord, there is complete unity between all living beings, even up to the limit of the wild animals and human society. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu displayed this living unity in the jungle of Madhya Pradesh, where even the tigers, elephants, and many other ferocious animals perfectly cooperated in glorifying the Supreme Lord. That is the way to peace and amity. Amity means when everybody gets along together, friendship. That is the way to peace and amity all over the world. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namini Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Kacharani Vishesha Sunya Vadipas Chakshade Satarani Om Mangyanam Timaram Dasya Gananjana Sulakaya Chaksur Umilitam Jaina Kasmai Sudarave Namaha Panchakalpa Dribhyascha Kripa Sindhu Deva Chakutitana Pavanidhyo Vaishnavyo. Okay, so Prabhupada talks about each of these features of the universal form of the Lord. This is, in the Bhagavatam, the universal form is talked about three times in length, right here in the beginning of the second canto, where it's called the first step in God realization. Then later on, again in the second canto, chapters 5 and 6, the universal form again talked about from a slightly different angle, a little more depth. And then in the third canto, so the sixth chapter, there's a description of the creation of the universal form, kind of cosmic embryology. So those three places. It's typical of Bhagavatam how the same subject has gone over several times. The Bhagavad Gita is the same way. The pedagogical method is interesting because the same subjects are gone over again and again and again, each time adding more detail from another point of view and so on, so you finally build up a complete picture of the thing. You see that in Bhagavad Gita. It's not the way you're taught to organize lessons. You learn how to teach nowadays, but this is apparently the Lord's method, because Bhagavatam is the same way. You go over this universal form three different times. And so, as is explained in this chapter, this is a way of looking at the whole universe as being the body of the Lord. Now, the Lord has no material body. So, in one sense, Prabhupada describes it as kind of imagination. But on the other hand, it also indicates that, well, there's a couple of, two main points, I think. One, that everything is divine. Nature is divine. Okay? This is sometimes called pantheism. The idea that God is everywhere. And that pantheism usually means in the West that nature is God. And there are philosophers, even in the 20th century in the West, who have put forward the philosophy that God is the cosmic organism. That the cosmos is an organism, a living being, and the supreme living being. So this is the idea of, and there's some truth to it. One thing is that actually the cosmos, the universe, is a living being. The universe is ensouled. Sometimes Krishna is described as the soul of the universe, huh? Vishvatma. So it is, in one sense, the Lord's body. If he's the soul of the universe, then the universe is his body. But what it tells us is the universe is alive. Some years ago, in America, a biologist put out a book he called the Gaia Hypothesis. Gaia is an old name for Earth, the Earth goddess, a Greek called Gaia. So his point was that the Earth is a living being. But not just the Earth, actually the whole universe. What it means to say that the universe is a living being or an organism means that, so see, here's my material body, it's an organism. Now this body has other organisms inside, each cell is an organism. And then the body is composed of cells and it is an organism. So to say something is an organism is to say that the whole is as unified or more unified than any of its parts. So that's what makes it. Like if you take a swarm of bees, a bee is an organism, but the swarm is not, because they're discrete and they're not unified. If the swarm of bees was as unified as a bee, then the swarm would be an organism. You understand what I'm saying? So if we say that the universe is this unified, certainly because it is pervaded by the consciousness of the Lord, messages pass from one into the other instantaneously and so on. So, and it is not only an organism, but it is in a way, it is God's body. That is to say, it's divine. Divine means in relationship to Krishna. It has a relationship. Everything is related to Krishna. So this pantheism, that nature is not that nature is God, but that nature is divine, is true. And that's an important point. So we'll get back to that that point, because it's very relevant today. That people understand this. So a way to begin to understand this is this meditation on the universal form. Of course, it's explained in this chapter, people cannot have a transcendent idea of God as beyond material nature. Their minds cannot go there, and people's minds and attention is absorbed in matter, so they can start to understand, get an idea of the cosmic organism by this kind of meditation, and then from there it goes into the super soul. The super soul as the soul of the universe. So from this you can see that the universe is an organism means that it's working like a single living entity with that coordination of parts. That's what Arjuna sees. He sees all time and all space and one time and one space, and he sees that what's happening is like the movements and the actions of this form of Krishna. So it's a kind of an external manifestation of the super soul. So this is important. It's not a very elevated realization of the Lord. It's the beginning, but it's here's Bhagavatam where time is short for Maharaj Yukshit, and yet, you know, space is dedicated to describing the universal form. So this is important for that reason. So So now when you see the varieties of birds, this is interesting word for birds, vayamsi. I never saw it before, vayamsi. Bird is usually, you know, dvija, kaga. Here's another one. I looked it up in the dictionary, the Sanskrit dictionary. I didn't have it. Do we have anybody who knows Sanskrit here? That wasn't in the dictionary. It's a single word. But the word vaya means a twig or a branch, and amshi means share, one who has a share. So you can, I think it means, you know, like when you think of all people, line of birds sitting on a branch. I'm a little over my head here, but I think that's what, which is pretty cool if that's the case, because tat vyakarnam. Vyakarnam, well, the word vyakarnam means grammar, in its usual sense. But you just think of the letters of the, you know, the kaka, gaga, all sitting in a row. and the chitram, the variety of this artistic ability to make artistic compositions in these birds, which are also beautiful, and also, of course, they sing very, very beautifully. They have tunes. Scientists have spent a lot of time analyzing bird songs. It turns out they're extremely sophisticated musicians and quite talented. In fact, they've discovered that bird brains do not have bird brains. They're very intelligent. They're extremely intelligent. We know that from Bhagavatam. We know that crows are wise and they talk and so on. But this is being discovered. There's a whole article in the science section of the New York Times about how smart. We always thought they were stupid. They said, but actually, we've been looking at their brains and they're really smart. So, what will they find out next, huh? So when you see these birds, you can think, okay, what an artist the Lord is. His artistic sense. And then it talks about Manu. The father of mankind. Manisha, the word Manisha means thoughts, and it also means intelligence, contemplation, ideas, and so on. Manisha. And Prabhupada says standard intelligence. By that he means, as you see in the purport, the Manu Samhita is the standard law book. So it's the intelligence of the thoughts that set the standards for everybody. So his standard intelligence that is exhibited or manifest is Manu. And Manuja, those who are born of Manu, that is to say, human race, humanity, Manuja, they are Nivasaha, his residence, where he resides. And the Prabhupada remarks very nicely here, human society is the residential quarters for the Lord. This means that the human being is meant for God realization and association with God. Because he does, he comes so many times and lives among us, becomes like one of us. So this is his residence. This is his house, so to speak, in the material world. Then it mentions the celestial human beings. They're humans, but they're kind of upadevas, or semi-demigods. The Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Charanas, and Apsaras. So they're noted for music and dance and so on. And so Here they represent the word swara, the word meaning musical notes or sounds, musical sounds or swara, and accents and so on like that. So there. And then when it comes to his virya, his virya means male potency. We have the English word virile. Really, that's the root meaning. So prowess means potency, especially of a martial sort, military sort. So the armies of the asuras. Now here's where Prabhupada takes an interesting turn here. So here's the Lord, who's manifest in the form of the asuras. Whoops! How is that? Because they have a place in the scheme of things, right? They're in the universe, and everything is part of the body of the Lord, so the asuras are. But then Prabhupada says, Maharaj Prahlad is the right type of representative of the Lord of the family of the asuras. Because we see that sometimes the asuras are devotees. Not only Prahlad, but Bali Maharaj also. The asuras are great devotees also. And we even see another time where there's a fight between Indra and... Vitrasura, yeah, between Vitrasura. It turns out that, you know, Vitrasura is the good guy and Indra is the bad guy. Right? So we sometimes see like that. So so the asuras also. So then when mentioning the asuras, then Prabhupada says, none of the living beings is away from the Lord's gigantic body. This is to say, we should understand that this is the point of the understanding of the universal form. Everything is in relationship with Krishna. There is nothing that is not in relationship to Krishna. When we say the first two words of the Hare Krishna mantra, when we say Hare Krishna, we have actually, in those two words, denoted or named all that there is. Because Hare is Krishna's energy and Krishna is Krishna. So that's what there is. All that there is Krishna and Krishna's energies. And when you said that, you said everything. There's nothing else. And the important thing about this understanding is the relationship between Krishna and Krishna's energies. This is called Sambandha Jnana. So this is the beginning, Sambandha, understanding of relationships. And relationships particularly mean relationship between Krishna and his energies. We ourselves are one of those, but the energies are in varieties, so there's different kinds of energies. And they're divided into three main divisions. We know this, the internal energy, Bahiranga Shakti, the inside energy by which the spiritual world is manifest, and the Antaranga Shakti, the outside energy, the external energy, which is the material world is manifest. And then there are self tatasta. Tata means a shore or a bank, as of a river or a lake. And that there's the shoreline where the water meets the land. Right there, sometimes it's underwater and sometimes it's on the land. And so we are sometimes in the interior, the internal potency, and sometimes in the external potency. So tatastha, standing on the bank, a marginal energy. And those are the three of the energies of the Lord. But they're all the Lord's energies. The internal potency and the external potency is as much as Krishna's energy as the internal potency. It's another kind of energy, but it is his energy. And therefore it is related to Krishna. And Krishna consciousness means seeing everything as related to Krishna. As soon as I see something not related to Krishna, separate from Krishna, then that is called Maya. And so, to get out of Maya doesn't necessarily mean to get out of the material world. It means to get out of the idea or the conception or the vision that things are, something is separate from Krishna. Prabhupada remarks somewhere, and he said that people want this pantheistic vision. They want to see God everywhere, everything in God. And you meet people all the time, at least in the material world, who, when they want to talk to you about their idea of God, it's when they go camping or hiking or out in the ocean and they see material nature, and that's when they get some sense of their highest realization of something big. They think nature is God. They worship nature. But there's a sense of awe and reverence like that in certain moments associated with it. And so people do want this idea. But Prabhupada says, if you want to see people, he said people don't know that if you actually want to experience or see everything in God and God in everything, then you have to engage everything in God's service. That's the point. You have to engage. Engaging things in God's service is acknowledging the connection. What is engaging things not in God's service? That is called sense gratification. Sense gratification means to take something in the material world, a series of things, my own senses and the sense objects, and engage them in such a way that where is Krishna? Not there. I am the enjoyer and I am the controller. If you think about what sense gratification is, we bring our senses into contact with the objects, and when we do, there's a feeling of enjoyment. This is in the Bhagavad Gita, the phrase is samsparsaja bhoga. There's a bhoga, there's enjoyment that comes from some, that's born out of samsparsha, the contact between the senses and the objects. We have this experience, right? Here's the object, right? My fist. Here's my open hand. This is my sense. And poof, like this, right? And then there's a certain sensation which we call pleasure, right? Actually, I don't think that, should you find yourself in a position of sense gratification, try to kind of step back mentally and look at what's happening. Because actually, just to bring the senses into contact with the objects and have some feeling of pleasure, that's not yet quite, that doesn't have to be sense gratification. Because you could have the same indifference to the pleasure that you might have to something uncomfortable or pain. But what happens is when sense gratification, there's a feeling of pleasure, and then something else happens in our minds. We think, I'm enjoying. I am the enjoyer. We rejoice in that pleasure. And if we look very carefully what happens, we puff up. You may notice that I thought of this, I was in the city of San Diego, which is the happiest place in America, because the weather is always perfect, and there's beautiful beaches, and everybody enjoys. And that was the first time I saw this bumper sticker on cars that said, "Are we having fun yet?" So I realized that, I've noticed that now when people are enjoying, they not only enjoy, but they enjoy their enjoying, so to speak. You know, they take delight in it. We are enjoying, we are having a good time. And a lot of times they make a lot of noise. Everybody else knows they're having a good time. So you're proving, I am the enjoyer. You puff up. You think you become more real, you have more substance. You know. And this of course increases their false ego. I am the enjoyer. And of course then I am the controller, because you've got to own the things that you, or try to own the things that you enjoy. They belong to you. This is sense gratification. Where is Krishna in that act? Disappear. Maybe off in the distance somewhere. Thank you, Lord, for gratifying my senses. So you stay in the background and gratify my senses. This is the order-supplier concept. But actually, you're not involved in this act. This is between me and the sense objects. What this means is that sense gratification is the act of atheism. That's why these things, Prabhupada has said, you know, human life is meant for self-realization and not sense gratification. Because these two things are antithetical. They're opposed. They're inversely proportional. Do you know mathematics? They're inversely proportional. Think of a scale, you know, an old-fashioned pan balance, like if you get bananas out front or something, you know, the bananas in one pan and a weight in another, right? So that's like a scale like that, right? That's inversely proportional. So if here in my right hand, I have self-realization, and here in my left hand is sense gratification. If sense gratification goes up, you look at the other side, the self-realization goes down. And if self-realization is going up, you look at the other side, sense gratification is going down. So this is the inverse proportion. This is like a law of nature. See, what doesn't happen is this. They both go up together. We keep hoping. So Prabhupada has made this really clear to us. So what happens because of this sense gratification? Krishna disappears from you because I'm taking his place. This is my God project. I am the enjoyer and I am the controller. And the external potency, you can have that idea. That idea is completely absent in the internal potency. But in the external potency, you can have this notion of sense gratification and think that you're the, and then God disappears, he vanishes. When sense gratification begins to decrease, then Krishna starts to become visible. Because the sense gratification has incapacitated our senses. Tasi Krishna Namadi Nabhavidrayam India. Therefore, you know, our senses right now, they cannot grasp Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. But if we can connect them again, Sevan Mukehi Jivado Swayam Yivas Purachada, when the senses are somehow connected with Krishna, that's devotional service, the senses are used, but now not for our sense gratification, then they regain their capacity to see Krishna. They become enabled. Right now they're disabled. We are disabled. But we become we gain our power and Krishna appears. Because really Krishna is not far away. In universal form, he's all pervading, he's everywhere. We don't see anything without Krishna seeing it first. We don't taste anything without tasting it first. Every act of consciousness or experiencing, Krishna is there. But sense gratification, we don't see. Where is God? There is no God at all. A pure devotee looks around, where is God? There he is. The first of facts. Just as evident to one whose vision is clear that Krishna is there, as it is self-evident to a sense enjoyer that there is no God. Because he wants God out of the way. He wants to enjoy. How much does he want to enjoy? More and more and more. What's the limit? There is no limit, you know. It's my God project. We've come to this material world, each a glacier, some Uthena, because of desire and hate. And what is the original desire? Why can't I be God? And what is the original hate? Why should Krishna be God? We have to get over this. We have to restore the relationship with Krishna. Yes, Krishna, you are the Supreme Personality of God. And I'm really happy about that. And I'm happy to be the servant. So we use our senses now with the idea that the sense objects, they belong to Krishna. My senses belong to Krishna. I belong to Krishna. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in one of his songs, I no longer belong to myself. I belong to Krishna. And then Krishna appears. And then the relationship with Krishna is seen in everything. And then the material world becomes as good as Vaikuntha. And you see that everything is fitted together in Krishna's plan. This is what happens. Anyway, there's a lot more to say about that, but it's already almost 9 o'clock. We have one last thing. Let me point out that in the religions that come from the Near East, Judaism, Islam, Christianity, they believe in God, but they theologically they see God and God's energies as separate. There's always the doctrine that in all these religions, that the material energy is not God's energy. The Christians have this doctrine of creation out of nothing. It is not God's energy, but somehow or other he pulled it out of nothing. This is not conducive to bhakti. And it probably indicates that people think that the material world is to be enjoyed separate from. You know, this is a kind of a karmakanda preference to religion. That I acknowledge God, I follow the rules, and I enjoy according to God's rules, and that's just basically karmakanda religion. So this idea that everything is Krishna's energy and belongs to him and should be engaged in his service, it actually makes a difference. This theological idea, chincha beta beta tattva, nothing is different from Krishna, even though Krishna is different from everything, is a very important idea. And so this contemplation of the universal form is kind of a practical introduction to this understanding. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes?
If I want to get something material, if I have a very strong desire to get something material.
Do you have a desire to get something material? Yeah.
So, but by Shravana process, I understand that this is not good. But still, the design is very strong.
Yeah.
So, like, there is some, like, should I get this, this what I want and get the realization, or I can do somehow? There is some prayer or something.
Some what? Okay, so let me understand. So here's this material desire. Now you understand it's not good, right? You accept that?
Yes.
But still, it's, the desire is still there. Right? That's the problem. Even though I understand this material desire is not good for me, just because I know that doesn't mean the desire goes away. Right? Then what's the next part?
And I'm asking,
should you get what you want? Pray you don't.
We should
pray to Krishna. Actually Prabhupada said we should pray to Lord Nisringadev. We should pray to Nisringadev by hearing Nisringadev, Hridaye Nisringadev. We say Hridaye Nisringadev, we should pray to the Lord to sit in my heart and kill my Hiranyakashipu-like material desires. Hiranyakashipu is the representative of all desires to enjoy in this world. That's called Karmashayan in Sanskrit, a strong desire to enjoy fruitive activities. Those desires are very strong. We cannot kill them. They're too big. They're bigger than us. But if the Srinivas sits in our hearts, we can do it. We can destroy them. So no problem. Or is there a problem? Because we have to pray to the Srinivas, we have to want him to come. We cannot say, please destroy all my material desires, but not yet. Or please destroy my material desires, but not this one. So we should although the desires are there, we should be praying to the Lord to help us become free from them. If we don't pray like that, then it's an offense against the holy name to maintain material desires. Just to have the material desires is not an offense. It's a contamination, but it's not an offense against the holy name. But if we maintain the material desires, then it becomes an offense against the holy name. We should try to get rid of them. That means we have to trust Krishna. That's why it's faith, huh? We have to trust Krishna, we have to trust the holy name, if I attain Krishna consciousness, I will be satisfied in every department better than I could ever imagine. Because these material desires will kill us. Sense gratification is the cause of death. The sense gratification, the more we gratify the senses, the more we identify with the body, and the more we are in the process of birth and death in the material world. Prabhupada said that death is an illusion we've imposed upon ourselves due to our desire to enjoy in this world. So that's what you get for a few cheap thrills. It's not worth it. We have to understand this and then very seriously pray to the Lord to help us become free from these material desires. And understand that when that is done, then we will be happy. The idea that we'll become happy by gratifying the senses is a huge mistake. It doesn't work. You see what happens to sense gratifiers? Don't just look at the guy in the mansion. Keep following him all the way out to the inn. You see what happens to them, all of them? At the inn, they all look terrible. They're having a bad time. The party is over at the time of death. It's not, and whatever you thought you have to give it up. So that's what happens. It's not good. Dehi samsparsaja bhoga dukkha yona evate. Krishna says those pleasures which rise from the contact between the senses and the objects are in fact the cause of all suffering. It's just the opposite from what we think. That's why what we think is called maya. It's an illusion. What we do to become happy actually causes our misery. And what actually is the cause of our happiness, in the beginning at least, it looks like suffering. No sex, no intoxication. Yeah? People, oh, you are really suffering, huh? That's actually the cause of happiness. We have to understand these things. And we have to put them into action. If we associate with people who are engaged in sense gratification, we'll have a very hard time. If we associate with devotees, it will become possible. Okay? Yeah?
Yeah, you were mentioning this balance, that as sense gratification goes down, self-realization goes up. But sometimes you hear about people doing demoniac austerities, where I can't imagine controlling my senses as much as Ram Kashyapu ever did. I mean, he was like the supreme control of the senses in so many ways. So is it always followed that if one gives up sense gratification and prioritization?
Well, he gave it up only temporarily. Look, anyone who goes to school so that in the future they'll be able to make money is undergoing austerities. All their friends are out drinking beer, but they're spending up late nights over the test tube or whatever. But in the end, so everybody performs some austerity so that later they can enjoy. So that's just a form of delayed sense gratification. So that's different. That's different. Now, if you're performing these kinds of austerities simply to increase your material enjoyment later on, how people do it all the time. That's what they're doing. They swim through fire to have sex. You know, I mean, they do it all the time. That's not really austerity. Yeah. You cannot dovetail sense gratification. Material desires, I can serve Krishna in a certain way according to my aptitudes and abilities. That's okay. But sense gratification, Prabhupada said, I'm quoting, cannot be dovetailed. What does that mean? I enjoy and I give God my remnants. So, that's karma kanda. So devotional service means I offer everything to God and then I take His remnants. It's different. And if I offer it to God with the idea of getting a remnant later, then that's not a pure offer. Of course, you know, sometimes we like it when we cook prasadam and we think it will taste good in the end, although we're offering to Krishna. We should think of Raghunath Das Goswami when he was out behind Jagannath temple eating the spoiled prasadam that even the animals wouldn't eat. He'd wash it off. Jagannath prasadam, you know, the storekeepers would sell it, then it would go bad, they'd put it out in the bag, the animals would eat it, and then what they wouldn't eat, they would take it and wash it and honor it. Mahaprabhu heard about it. And he came to Raghunath Das Goswami, and you know what he said? I hear you're having a feast and you didn't invite me. So we should understand that was a feast. That really was. So we should hope one day to become that advanced. When there's a taste for Krishna consciousness, it's called ruchi. Right? There's two levels of ruchi. One, we like to order prasadam or hear a kirtan if it's nicely done. But in the higher stage, we don't care. It's connected with Krishna, we like it. They can't carry it through, they can't keep in time. If they're chanting Hare Krishna, we like it better than any expert material performance. And if it's been cooked and offered to Krishna with love, we honor it with relish. That's the higher stage. We should aspire to that. Okay? Now it's time for the song. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada, peace.